Welcome to the My Magazine podcast, where we talk about everything from pop culture to trending topics. I'm your host, Amani, and you guys are in for an amazing discussion today about immigration and how COVID has affected visas, immigration statuses, and green cards. I had the pleasure of interviewing lawyer, author, and passionate advocate Tamina Watson. Tamina lives and breathes U.S. immigration. She is the founder of Watson Immigration Law and specializes in business, investor, and family-based immigration. She is also the founder of Airport Lawyer and a nonprofit called Widen. And on top of all of that, she is the mother of two little girls. In this episode, we also discuss the upcoming release of her new book called Legal Heroes and the Era of Trump. Stay tuned for more. Okay, we're now being joined by Tamina Watson. How are you, Tamina?
I'm well, Amani. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. Before we get started talking about your upcoming book, I just want to ask you a few questions about immigration and different things and how it's been affected by COVID for our listeners.
Of course. I can talk immigration all day.
How has COVID impacted immigration thus far?
You know, it has been an unprecedented time. I think your listeners will realize COVID has changed the way of our life, and that absolutely impacted the way immigration has been dealt within this country. And I think one of the ways to look at it is to look at it from the perspective of types of people in the U.S. Some are tourists, some are on visas, some are coming on green cards. And the biggest challenge has been people coming into the U.S. And so if you think about the people who are tourists and already here, suddenly people couldn't leave. So those people who are in the U.S. temporarily visiting family or, you know, Disney, whatever plans that they had, suddenly they couldn't get on their flights anymore because flights were being canceled, and they were canceled for a very long time. And so these people had to then extend their visa statuses using the forms and the procedures that immigration puts in front of you. And that came with a lot of challenges for a lot of people. And the United States government didn't actually give any forgiveness for any of these people. You have to file this paperwork. And so that type of person, the temporary tourist folks, they've had a lot of challenges. If you think about the students who were here, who finished their schooling and needed to leave, we've dealt with a lot of those types of people, and they had to do the same thing. They had to extend their status and then find a window within which they could leave. You know, your listeners might know that some countries were completely banning people from getting in. And so people who were residents of one country but not citizens, they could not go back home.
Right.
So, for example, the United Arab Emirates, like Dubai, people who live in Dubai, a lot of them are residents but not citizens. They could not leave the country. They couldn't go back home. So they were stuck. Some people told me that they could find a flight back to their home country, but there were no direct flights, so they had to go through stopovers. But the stopovers wouldn't allow those people to stop. And so the challenges were not only unprecedented, but very stressful, because a lot of people just wanted to leave. So that's one type of situation we've seen. A lot of green card holders were outside the country, and some of them are still outside the country. And if you are a green card holder, you are subject to the rules of being a green card holder. And one of them is you have to be in the United States 6 months out of the year. And so for a lot of people who had already been close to the 6 month mark outside the U.S. were suddenly stuck outside the U.S. And so they, a lot of them are actually stuck outside the country, and they have had to find windows to get back in or file paperwork and, you know, have proof that they were out and could not come back in. So that's another type of person. There are a lot of visa holders in the United States, you know, H-1B visa holders, work visa holders, various types. What we saw in June this year is that this administration had signed a lot of executive orders.
Right.
And some of them were banning people from coming in. And so those executive orders were also in categories. So a lot of green card holders who are at the end of their green card application, who are going to come into the U.S. with their new green card, green cards that were going to be issued to them, the executive orders basically said, no, you cannot have a green card until December. For work visa holders, initially was a lot of confusion about who was banned and who wasn't banned, but a lot of people are outside the U.S. who are now stuck because their visa category has been banned. A lot of people in the United States who are here cannot travel because if they leave the country, they cannot come back because those visa categories are banned. So what's interesting is that there's been an upheaval, a lot of chaos on top of the pandemic that we're facing. And as an immigration lawyer, every day brings a new problem. And it's been interesting to see how we had to essentially figure out one person at a time. With cases that we file on a very regular basis, we are now seeing cases being questioned on displacing American workers. And I think with 40 million people out of work, the government is looking at how can they restrict policies for people who are already here, getting a new visa, getting visa transfers, and things like that. So lots of things have happened in a short amount of time because of COVID, and we've had to basically, you know, go through a lot of stressful situations. And we're not out of it because COVID obviously is still here.
Right.
The bans are still in place. A lot of bans are until December 2020. And I was just talking to somebody about the bans. When you listen to the news or read the news, there's confusion about who's banned, who isn't banned. Is it a country ban? Is it a visa ban? And so you're navigating a lot of different challenges all at once. And so anybody who is thinking about immigration, whether you're an employer hiring somebody or you're an individual bringing somebody from abroad, whether it's a family member or friends, you now need to look at whether there's a Department of State country ban, like people from Europe are banned because of COVID, or is there a visa ban? And you've got to cross-reference a lot of things. And even immigration lawyers are sort of, you know, we're stressed about looking at where is this ban coming from and how is this person impacted. And so individuals who are not lawyers are struggling even more.
Right. And you mentioned the different bans and different bills that this administration has passed. What are some ways that our listeners can currently advocate for immigration reform?
That's such a good question.
Thank you.
For immigration reform, that is what we need at the moment. We've needed it for a very long time. And why this administration has resorted to executive orders is because Congress cannot agree on what needs to be passed. And one of the things that a problem is that we are now in such a divided country.
Yes.
Cannot agree with the right, and they're not coming to a middle ground. And this administration has taken advantage of that, where they have made massive changes that would really require Congress to act, but they're unilaterally making these changes. And that are frankly illegal, which is why a lot of litigation is happening. And so for people who want to see immigration reform, you've got to call your senator, you've got to call your congressman and congresswoman and advocate for change. Say, I want to see change. This is how I'm impacted. The other thing that people can do is write letters to newspapers saying how they're affected and why they want to see immigration reform. Letters to the editors actually is a very effective way of getting your voice heard, because it doesn't take a lot of time to write these letters, and they're not very word heavy. The longer the letter is, the chances are the newspaper won't publish it. So they're relatively short and concise. But your representatives are always listening to these newspapers and what is being published. They're reading them, but you're also educating the public around you. So that's the second way to do it. And the third way is really your vote matters. You speak with your vote. If somebody in your area is not actually representing you and your voice and your family's voice and everybody around you, their voices, you can make yourself heard with your voice. So the November 3rd election is so incredibly important because you're not just voting for the presidential election. You're voting for everybody on that ticket, and a lot of them are local representatives, your state Senate, your state representatives, your state auditor, your state treasurer, council seats, so many of these seats that have a direct impact on your day-to-day work and living, that your voice is so important that you need to make sure that you have it heard. So I'd say number one, recapping, make sure you call your representatives. Number two, write letters to the editors. And number three, make sure you vote.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that recap. We know that different businesses are struggling right now, especially entrepreneurs. What are some challenges that you feel that they are facing right now, specifically to immigration? And what advice do you have for them?
That's a really good question. And to be honest, I'm relaunching my first book I wasn't sure if I was going to mention that, but I have a book called The Startup Visa. And that book is available on Amazon or on Barnes & Noble and other ebook stores. It's called The Startup Visa, Key to Job Growth and Economic Prosperity in America. And it really advocates for a visa that we should have for startup founders. We do not have one. But the visa categories that we have at the moment that businesses use to get high-skilled immigrants or entrepreneurs use, some of them are H-1B visas, some of them are L visas, and these are the visas that are currently banned by the executive orders. But this administration at the same time also says, hey, we want a merit-based system. There's nothing more meritorious than having entrepreneurs come to the country and help them grow jobs, create jobs, grow the economy.
Right.
And so right this moment in history, we need new jobs. 40 million people are not in work at the moment. And immigrants are proven to be creative, innovative, hardworking, and entrepreneurial. And they are job creators. So when your listeners advocate for immigration reform, I would love them to say, we also need a startup visa. And so we need that. We don't have it. So the long and the short of it is businesses are struggling. A lot of people are not able to get the talent that they need. But at the same time, technology has bridged a lot of the gap. And, you know, there's a lot of remote work happening. It's interesting to see how technology is being used for businesses in the U.S. that are using remote high-skilled workers in different countries. It's not an ideal solution because the time zones are different, the customers are in different time zones as well. And so the challenges are absolutely phenomenal, but businesses are struggling, but they are somehow making do. It would be helpful not to have bans that are visa-specific. I can understand country-specific ones, but visa-specific ones are really crippling. And so at the moment, the challenges are absolutely visas. There's no question. But the economy is also having an impact, too. So just like you and me, we're having challenges in our daily lives. Businesses are having that, too. So I hope, you know, the November election will tell us which direction we'll be able to go in November onwards so that businesses and the economy can actually make decisions and act accordingly.
Yes, and speaking of different businesses, you have lots of business ventures, such as airportlawyer.org and the Washington Immigration Defense Network. Could you please tell us a little bit about those?
Thank you so much for asking about those. Those are actually not businesses. Those are my passion projects. I spend a lot of time and resources on basically helping the community. I'm very fortunate. I have my law firm that gives me the insight into what the immigration problems are, and it allows me to have the flexibility to do pro bono work. And so Airport Lawyer came along when the Trump administration had its first ban in January 2017. And your listeners might remember that suddenly the country stopped, airports were shut down, but not necessarily shut down, but people couldn't get on planes anymore or get off the plane even.
Right.
There were protests around the country, and it's because the government had a travel ban that affected majority Muslim countries, seven such countries. So there were people who essentially couldn't get on planes wherever they were in the world. They couldn't get off the planes when they landed here in those immediate hours after the ban. And there was a lot of litigation.
Wow.
But what happened was passengers really needed a lot of help from lawyers. And Airport Lawyer became a platform to assist these people with volunteer lawyers. And so it was launched in February 2017, and one of my co-founders, who is actually in my second book, he's mentioned it as a profile in my second book, he continues to monitor that. And with all the travel bans that have happened since then, including just a couple of months ago, the Airport Lawyer is a platform for passengers to get help as they arrive into the United States. So that's Airport Lawyer, and it was really a rewarding experience. It wasn't just me, I'm just a co-founder of that. There were several other people and organizations that helped with that, but it was a critical solution for a critical moment in history. And so all of that work really led to realizing that when I get the request to provide volunteer lawyers to immigration court, I wouldn't necessarily have a path to do it. I needed a vehicle. And Washington Immigrant Defense Network derived from that notion that we needed to have a way to maximize the resources that we had, which is really lawyers who don't have immigration experience but have lawyering skills. And so Washington Immigration Defense Network essentially trains non-immigration lawyers, provides a stipend to immigration lawyers, and then provides pro bono assistance to detained immigrants who need assistance with their trial, because there's no right to counsel in immigration courts. One of the notions that has been exposed heavily under this administration particularly is that when you are detained in immigration court, you don't have a right to a lawyer, unlike a criminal court, where you do have a right to a lawyer. And so that really posed a big problem, and it's been a long-time problem, but it became critical after the separation of parents particularly, and especially when we in Washington State had about 200 of them, to see how are we going to represent them. So that's what Washington Immigrant Defense Network is. It's generally referred to as WIDEN, and our website is www.widenlaw.org. And it's essentially a non-profit. We raise funds. All of us are volunteers who operate and manage the organization, and we raise the funds to get the work done and pay the immigration lawyers a stipend. Then the immigrant, him or herself, doesn't have to pay anything. And that also is a critical way of expanding the immigration services that people can receive.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you for asking. I feel very honored and proud and privileged to have been able to come up with that. And I have a lot of people to thank who have helped me co-found the organization and who continuously help with these, with all the various things that need to happen with representing our clients.
Yes, you have definitely been extremely busy, a busy bee during this time. So let's talk about the upcoming release of your new book. It's entitled Legal Heroes in the Era of Trump. So what inspired you to write this book?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for letting me speak about the book. The book actually happened pretty quickly, and it's really a compilation of lawyers who have done a lot of extraordinary work in the last 4 years, you know, similar to what I've done, but more.
Right.
And so what happens through COVID is I have a podcast called Tamina Talks Immigration, and it's available on iTunes and Spotify and other podcast platforms. And I thought to myself, well, you know, let me just interview a lot of people, because now I'm working from home. I don't have to go to a studio anymore.
Right.
Now that Zoom is more accepted, let me just interview some of the people that inspire me. And I started to do a series of interviews. And then somebody said to me, why are you not putting these interviews in one spot? And that's how the book sort of came to be. And the idea, you know, essentially came along in June. And then it sort of happened very quickly, because I wanted to get the book out before November's election to make sure other people are inspired.
Yes.
By what everyday lawyers have accomplished. You know, I didn't, before Trump was elected, I was just a regular person just going about my day. But what I recognized is I had a skill and a knowledge set that was going to become critical in his administration. And a lot of people have stepped up in the last 4 years to do just a little bit more, just a little bit more, just a little bit more, more than their day job, to help the community, help vulnerable people, help policies that are not, you know, created in good faith. And so the book is essentially a compilation of profiles, which includes my story, but other lawyers' stories. A lot of them are in Washington State, but some of them are not. And it's really showing a set of lawyers with different backgrounds. They're retired lawyers, in-house lawyers, solo lawyers, government lawyers, nonprofit lawyers. All the work they've done as a sample set to show what lawyers have had to do in the last 4 years and what lawyers need to do more in the next 4 years, regardless of who is going to be in office. But what I also hope is non-lawyers will be inspired, because really what we have is a movement that is driven by the people. If you see what the protests are, you know, doing, whether it's in Portland or Atlanta or even Seattle, this is a time where the people are rising.
Right.
Because the Constitution says the government is for the people, by the people, and we are the people. And so all the people need to rise up. And so my hope is that lawyers will be inspired, but the people will be inspired too. And we need so much more of that. And the book is titled Legal Heroes in the Era of Trump, because we are at a time where the pandemic is bringing us down. We are struggling with stresses of work from home, whether you have a job or not, even for some people. Children who need to go to school, but they're doing online schooling. Teachers are struggling to figure out how to teach our children. You know, restaurants are figuring out how to, you know, stay in the business. There are just so many struggles that it's very difficult not to be depressed. You've got to really find the golden nuggets to uplift you.
Right.
Because when you look at the news, we are all anxious, anxious about what the future holds for us. But my hope is that the book will bring some hope, some inspiration, some uplifting of people to know that we can get through this. And we're going to come through this stronger and make sure that America is going to be the country that the founders had set it out to be. So that's what I hope the book will do for people.
Yes, I mean, it sounds like a great book, definitely a page-turner. Where can listeners find that book?
Well, thank you so much for asking. The book has not been published yet, but the book will be published on September 29th, I hope. That's the tentative date. Awesome. And I will make sure you have a copy of the link so you can share it with your listeners. But if people follow me on my blog, which is on watsonimmigrationlaw.com, you can sign up to our blog. You can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Facebook at Watson Immigration Law. You can follow me on Instagram, Tamina Watson. All of the information will definitely be there as well. But I'm hoping the book will definitely be out on September 29th. And I would be grateful for people to leave reviews on the website. I'm so sorry about the noise behind me. And also leave, buy the book on the day of the launch so that Amazon recognizes it as an important book.
Thank you so much, Tamina, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to listening to this podcast, sharing it, and thank you for all the work you do. I've definitely seen your website, and I know you are doing a lot of good work to make sure that people are informed about what's happening in the world.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into another episode. This episode was brought to you by Popple. Popple is the digital business card that everyone needs. With a simple tap, your friends or business partner can instantly have access to your social media accounts, music, and payment platforms. Make sure to use promo code AmonMag for 20% off your next Popple. As always, for more news and information like this, make sure to check out AmonMagazine.com. See you next week.